Hi.
New York, New York, 10036. Pro country.
What you see is what you get.
Hell has no fury. He drives the most expensive car because second best never enters his mind.
Of all the billions of planets in space, only one is off limits to man.
It all began with a curse.
The evil you did this day will be avenged.
A curse.
From the mists of infinity, they come, rising from the cold, damp earth to take what is now theirs.
You are in a room filled with your friends, but they are all dead.
Night, when the earth is quiet, and the good people of the world are sleeping, the night visitor comes to call.
The streets have been taken over by thieves, dope addicts, rapists, muggers. We live in fear. One man is doing something about it.
These are the sounds of 6 feet of silver death.
Grindhouse Purgatory, 42nd Street, Pete.
It's time for another Grindhouse Purgatory with 42nd Street, Pete. This one's going to be a little different, though, because Pete and I just lost a friend. Bill Margold, always usually credited as William Margold, recently died on air on his show. Now, Bill was a close friend of mine. I've known him for about 6-7 years, talked to him on the phone all the time. I had just talked to him 2 weeks before he died. We were arranging for him to be on my show again, and I can't believe he had a heart attack on the air. In a weird way, Pete, I don't want to hear that. But in another weird way, is it wrong that I kind of want to hear how he died?
Well, he died doing something he loved. He's putting over the business. I met Bill years ago when they used to have the old East Coast video show, because he set up, because he was doing a lot of work with the industry for people who were no longer in the industry, like the fans of X-Rated Entertainment, those Hall of Fame things he was doing. He was always set up at you know, the adult section at the East Coast video show. So that's how I would run into him every show. And I was down there, God, up until maybe, when was 9-11? Was what, 2001?
2001.
Okay. Up until 2003, then it shut down. I got a story if you want to hear it. It's really, it was something, you know, Bill was always trying to help people.
Bill was one of, in all honesty, he was one of the kindest, most giving people out there. I mean, you could ask him for something and he would absolutely break his back to try and help you. I never saw him turn somebody away. He formed a nonprofit to help girls that wanted to get out of the porn industry, get back into regular lives. He had a freedom of speech coalition that he started, the Fight for Your Freedom group about battling censorship. I mean, while I knew him, he had a bunch of old X-rated laser discs that he didn't want anymore because he didn't have a laser disc player. He just sent me those, as well as one of the comic books. Remember that 3-issue X-rated comic book that he wrote?
Yeah,
He sent me those. I remember just last year, in the early 2000s, they made a pilot episode for to make the movie L.A. Confidential into a TV show. Somehow Bill missed this pilot that never aired. I sent him a DVD of that, and he and I would just sit and talk about movies constantly. He would recommend stuff to me. I'd recommend stuff to him. He was just such an amazing, giving person.
Yeah, like I said, I ran into him at the, you know, the video show, and it was right after 9-11, and he was trying to raise money for the guys that, you know, the firefighters, the first responders and stuff that got hurt or injured and stuff like that, money for them and their families. So he was going to have this thing after the show. He had, supposedly, you know, all these chicks were going to be there. It was $30, and to get in, you had to buy this T-shirt that said, "We don't blow people up, we just blow people." So I was down there with two other guys. So, you know, $30, what the fuck for a night out? You can't beat that. So I bought the shirts. And, you know, it's after the show. We're getting ready to leave, and these guys have the shirts on. And I'm like, wait a minute. I said, I think you should just take them fucking shirts off and carry them in. And they said, why? I says, well, do you guys give blowjobs? Because I don't. I'm just carrying my shirt in. So then it dawned on him that, okay, we don't blow people up. We just blow people. You're wearing this fucking shirt that says you blow people. All right, so the joke's not lost. So we go to get there. We get in a cab that was piloted by Tommy Chong's doppelganger with a bottle of Poland Spring water that was filled with vodka, not water. A 20-minute ride took us 45 minutes. We get there. We go in. The food, which was those cheap bags of potato chips and shit like that, was all gone. There was like 3 cans of soda left and about 60 horny guys sitting around. Where are the broads? I walked over to Bill and I go, dude, what gives? And he goes, they stiffed me. They're down at the clubs. They're dancing. They stiffed me. He was a little bit tweaked. So I'm like, all right, fuck this. We're getting out of here. So I tell the guys and I said, hey, look, the $30 went to whatever. Who gives a fuck? Let's just go to a bar, go to, you know, go to a joint. So we come out. That idiot cab driver was still outside. Oh, dudes, what's the matter? Then all of a sudden another cab pulls up. We jump in that and it's this Asian guy. So he goes, what was he doing out there? And I go, well, he drove us there and I guess he was hanging out to drive us back. And I go, oh man, you shouldn't get in a cab with him. That motherfucker's crazy. So I'm like, holy shit. And the night went steadily downhill after that. But Bill, wanted to get involved with Grindhouse Purgatory. For some reason, he didn't write, but he ordered every issue. He actually, I had the thing around here and I couldn't find it today. Some article in a paper out in his area that he wrote about the magazine and how good it was and all that. And I think, you know, I didn't hear it from the last time, so I think I just sent him one. I'm like, you know, hey, it's good publicity. And like I said, I just came online and all of a sudden it's like he died on the air and I'm like, holy shit. And like him and Carter Stevens, who's a friend of mine, they're good friends. Carter credited him with, you know, prompting him to get into the business and how to work and things like that. Long Gene Silver, another mutual friend, Serena, you know, they were all devastated. I mean, this guy was so loved by the community.
Bill knew everybody.
Yeah, and we just kept on trying to do good and, you know, do good and stuff. And, you know, I think, you know, he was from he was working out of New York. I know the whole Reb, what was it? It was Reb's Pretty Girl Productions or something. That was the modeling agency.
Yeah, he used to work at a modeling agency before he got into adult. And see, he always, even in the 70s, when he was helping girls that wanted to be, you know, in the adult business, he would warn them, you will be doing things that right now you're probably okay with. But when you're 35 and have your second child, are you still going to be proud of, you know, a guy smoking a bong out of your asshole on film? And he would try and help girls with, are you sure you really want to do this?
Yeah. Yeah, he was one of the few that would do that.
Yeah, because, I mean, most people in the adult industry, especially in the 70s, would take advantage of anyone they could. Bill was like, I will represent you, but I need to be sure that you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
You know,
when he was actually in this stuff, I think he was doing a lot out of New York because, like I said, I got this tape called High School Honeys, and it's obviously off a 16-millimeter print. It's probably, I don't know, not even an hour long, but it's him as a teacher, a principal, I think, and then Serena comes in.
Well, so he did a lot in L.A., too, because he was very close to John Holmes. He was he was the one who gave Ron Jeremy the Hedgehog title. He created the Caught from Behind anal series. He wrote many, many adult films. He only directed about 11 of them. But he appeared, strangely enough, after he got older and wasn't able to, you know, perform the way, you know, he didn't look like what an adult film star should look like by the late 90s, but he would still appear in these just for fun in the non-sex roles.
Yeah.
You know, he would be like the cop that shows up or something like that. And I think that's kind of cool that he was still in the industry without needing to come on some chick.
Yeah, well, you know what the whole thing was? And, you know, people don't get this today because as a porn guy, Bill was a non-threatening guy, as was, you know, Robert Kerman, a few other guys. And what people don't understand was, because these guys were like, you know, they weren't these muscle guys like Rocco Siffredi with, you know, a 27-inch cock or something like that. That, you know, these guys looked like every man, and they were getting laid with hot chicks. So that was sort of the hook back then, that, you know, a guy, you know, an average guy off the street goes in, watches like Serena, you know, giving Bill a blowjob, and goes, wow, you know, he's not all that. You know, if he could get a chick like that, so can I. So that fueled the fantasy. You know, there was only a couple guys that were like, would like, you know, you're not going to compete with John Holmes. You weren't going to compete with Mark Stevens. You weren't going to compete with Jamie Gillis, even though like Jamie Gillis wasn't that real hung, but he was a menacing screen presence most of the time. So, but you know, the average ordinary guy is what sold tickets, because they weren't the focal point of the film. The chick was. They were just like a prop.
Well,
and
also,
that's why it worked.
We also have to point out to the audience, this was also an era when it wasn't until the early 1980s and the shot on video stuff where the story became secondary. You know, the entire setup is, oh, we can't pay for our pizza, let's suck the guy's dick.
Yeah.
You know, he would write these, and I mean what I say, he was a writer for these. I mean, you know, ones like Dracula Sucks and Flesh Gordon and Black Lolita and all this, they had more story than they had sex.
Yeah, well, see, that was the whole thing, because you had to have some kind of a plot line for the, quote, redeeming social value. Now, I don't know if you ever heard of Nick Phillips.
I have.
Okay. Nick did a lot of, you know, softcore and hardcore stuff back in the late 60s, early 70s. But almost all of his films had this downbeat ending, like have sex and die thing, almost like the Halloweens and the Friday the 13th, where, you know, have sex and get slaughtered. But all his things, you know, ended that way. And I said, why do you go that way? And he goes, because life ends that way. We all die, don't we? So
it's true.
He was real heavy with that shit. You know, there was never any, you know, the chick either died from an overdose, was killed, was shot, got in a car accident. There was no happy, happy, joy, joy in his shit. And
hell,
sometimes
he wrote Dracula Sucks.
Yeah.
Which even he couldn't believe they were allowed to get away with in 1978. If you guys have seen that film, that's a disturbing film. I mean, the porn in that is almost Rince Dream levels of intentionally unerotic.
Yeah. Sort of like San Francisco Bull.
What was that one with the rape? Where that Vietnam vet was raping women and it was...
Oh, the one I put over, Jesus Christ, Forced Entry.
Forced Entry with Harry Reams, yeah. Like,
but you know, the weird part about that was a groundbreaker, because it was one of the first films to feature a deranged Vietnam vet as a psycho killer. And it also, you know, I'm not really a big Sean Costello fan personally, but he was the first guy to have like incorporate real war footage where, like, you know, the psycho was like looking at a crowd and all of a sudden he saw a Vietnamese village and he's looking at cops and all of a sudden he sees Vietnamese soldiers and shit like that. So he was one of the first guys to do that. And that film really fucking flatlined a lot of people too.
Well, that's because, I mean, obviously we know the actress is not being raped. It really came across as such though. It's not a good movie to sit through. It's not an erotic film.
No. Actually, you know, when I was instrumental in getting that print, because I just, you know, started out releasing stuff through After Hours, and we had a gentleman's agreement not to knock heads on eBay over stuff. So when I saw it was up and I saw he had a bid on it, I called him up and I says, dude, you have to get this fucking film, regardless of what it costs. And he's like, what do you mean? And I explained it to him. I says, nobody's ever taken this off fucking film. It's like a lost film. So I said, I'll back you up if I have to. You know, if you start running out of money, I says, you know, the sky's the limit on this shit, dude. So they got it. And like the only thing they couldn't put, you know, the original poster said they taught him to kill. Rape was his own idea. They wouldn't put rape on the box. Because that would have been even today, that would have been a fucking killer. As far as you wouldn't be able to get it in stores, you know, probably on Amazon or online or any of these fucking places. So,
well, see,
yeah.
One of the things with Bill Margold was he was a champion for adult film. That it didn't matter if it was the mindless crap from the 80s or just the skits from the 90s or the real movies from the 70s or anything like that. He called himself a historian of adult. He never liked the term triple X because it was, you know, a bullshit term that never actually existed. He always used the term adult. And he was all about just championing adult into the mainstream. You look at the dozens of documentaries he's appeared in, just where he's defending the idea of the adult film as a real film. And unfortunately, I think that kind of got lost to the main public. I think no matter how much he fought, the mainstream public was not going to ever see an adult movie as legitimate cinema.
Well, that's because it stopped being legitimate cinema. I mean, up
by the 80s,
up until a certain point, because if you sit there, you know, I just sold my 16 millimeter print of Devil and Miss Jones simply because I needed the fucking money, and actually Longine is not doing well financially, and when my dog was sick last year, she threw me some cash, so I just threw her some too. But as far as like a movie, Devil and Miss Jones really holds up. Deep Throat, not so much, but there's other things like, oh, this one with Lisa DeLue, it was a period piece and actually had Cameron Mitchell.
Cafe Flesh actually has so much story, they were able to edit that into a softcore, and HBO used to show that on a regular basis in the 80s.
Yeah, and the other one was Dixie Ray Hollywood Star, where they actually brought it back to like the 40s with actual the cars, the dress, and they had like Cameron Mitchell showed up as a detective. Because he was like, down and out. But he didn't know sex though, you know?
Well, you know, like with Cafe Flesh, you had Rinse Dream. Look at Night Dreams.
Yeah.
Night Dreams is literally a pretentious art film with hardcore sex.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you took out the hardcore sex, this would be a pretentious art student's film.
Yeah.
It just has cum shots in it.
Yeah, it's sort of like Caligula.
Nah, Caligula, all that shit was added after the fact.
Well, I know, but that's that. Actually, if they didn't add that shit, it wouldn't have sold. You know, it comes down to that. So.
Probably not. But, you know, the point is, Bill was a champion of these, and not just these kind of movies. If you ever read his column on his website, he rarely looked at adult films. He loved the grindhouse films. He loved the kind of movies you and I love, Pete.
Yeah,
he loved these trash movies.
You know, he even told me, he goes, feel free to take something off my website, but I'm thinking, but they read it there already. You know how I work, dude. I don't want something that everybody's, you know, read already. It's gotta be new. That's the only reason why the mag works. I'm just sorry he never got a shot to do it. Kept asking him, but.
But he was so busy with everything else. It was just, you know, it's like me. I've got so many things I want to write. I just don't have time to write them because I have to actually live too.
He was supposed to come out here. He, you know, he was invited to Cinema Waste and everything was fucking paid for. And then he had, I think he had some kind of, that phobia where you're afraid to leave the house type deals going on or something.
His last few years, he was very much a homebody. He didn't go out much in his last couple of years, but you know, you kind of understand, like, okay, dude, I know where you're coming from, and with everything you've done, fine. But I don't know, I was shocked. I actually heard about his death from you, because
yeah,
it turned out he died, because, like I said, I talked to him 2 weeks earlier, maybe even a little less than that, maybe, you know, like a week and a half earlier. I talked to him on the phone, we talked for about a half hour, just shot the shit about movies, and he died on one of the days where I was so busy, I was basically not online. So I was driving to work the next day just talking to you, and you mentioned it, and I was fucking floored. I thought you were fucking with me at first.
No, I never fuck around with something like that. I was surprised. All of a sudden, I turned it on. It was in Carter's feed, was right in my face. And that was a picture of Bill, you know, with the Hawaiian shirt and the whole deal. So, it's fucked up. You know, I keep telling people this, you know, we live in a real fucking turbulent world, and a lot of us are getting, you know, a lot older, myself included. So, you know, no one's promised tomorrow. I mean, shit. I mean, ball, you know, going off topic for a minute, Balls, Mahoney and Axel Rotten, they died within 2 months of each other. Tag team partners, the same fucking age. Axel was over his pseudo brothers, Ian, recuperating. And when Ian dropped them off, Ian said, you know, when they reported his death, he goes, I knew that was going to be the last time I ever saw him alive.
Miguel Ferrar just died. The day we're recording this, Mary Tyler Moore just died today.
Yeah.
We're starting off 2017 really fucking bad.
Yeah, I know. It's really fucking bad. But, you know, you got to be realistic, too, that most of the people that we came up with, especially myself, because I'll be 65 in September, you know, most of the people we came up with were a lot older than us, and we didn't know it. You know, and, you know, we see them on camera. We see them on film. And, you know, they're frozen forever in time on film. But the bottom line is we're all fucking human, unfortunately, and we all go. I'm surprised I've been around this fucking long, to be honest with you, with all the shit going on with me.
It's just kind of strange to think of how, I don't want to say fragile it all is, but, because you do have a point, that these people are all getting older. Yeah, I didn't expect Bill to die. He was only 72. That's not that old, and he, you know, he was so full of life and vibrant. For him to just have a heart attack like that, right on the air, that's, I mean, in all honesty, Pete, that's creepy, isn't it? That he died on the air. I don't even know what the listenership would have been that night. How many people heard Bill die?
Oh, he didn't actually go, that thing just went to black.
Right. But I mean, you know, he didn't technically die until about an hour later at the hospital. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
They heard him essentially die on the air.
Yeah. It is weird and creepy, but like I say, you know, he died doing what he loved. I mean, if I keeled over 5 minutes from now, I'm doing something I like to do. My real sad concern is that when I was growing up, I thought, you know, I'd be preserved. You know, people call me a grindhouse historian and all this other shit, whatever. I honestly felt that there was always, you know, going to be a following for this shit where somebody would take care of it. And right about now, I ain't so sure. Because a lot of us are going by the wayside. And, you know, the newer generation don't give a fuck for physical product. They don't actually give a fuck for anything. And, you know, what we, you know, hold dear to us, I mean, just last year, people I was tight with, you know, on and off over the years, Zachary Lee, Ted Michaels, Herschel Gordon Lewis, they're all gone. You know, I hope I'll see them again, you know, in the big grindhouse and the beyond. But, you know, like I said, no one's promised tomorrow. When they're fucking gone, they're gone. So appreciate people while they're here. That's another issue I have with, you know, convention promoters and shit like that. You still got guys out there that would love to meet their fans, would like a last hurrah, so to speak. But, you know, keep on booking The Walking Dead. Guess what the fucking people want, you know?
Well, yeah, but some of these people, you know, like you pointed out with Bill and Cinema Wasteland, He wanted to be there. He talked to me about that. He was excited to be there, and then just his anxiety got the best of him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in retrospect, Cinema Wasteland would have been a fantastic last hurrah for him.
Yeah, well, unfortunately it was a last hurrah for Jamie Gillis because we didn't know he was sick, but, you know, like we said, you know, we brought him up there, we treated him with the respect, we fed him, we let him have a talk, we let him make some money, and, you know, he had a good time. We didn't know he was sick. Same thing with Marilyn Chambers. Who knew she would have a drug reaction 2 months later and die?
Miguel Ferrer, as I pointed out, just died of throat cancer. Yeah. I didn't even know he had cancer.
Well, you know, it's sort of like, you know, when Gunnar Hansen passed away, nobody knew he had pancreatic cancer. He didn't tell anybody. You know, but some people want to keep...
That is their business.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But it kind of hits us fans right in the testicles, you know?
Yeah. Hey, you know, some of these guys, you know, Robert Zadar, his last show was Cinema Wasteland. He was right behind me. He was dying as I sat there. How fucked up is that? But he wanted one last hurrah. He shouldn't have been there, but he wanted one last hurrah.
On Radiodrome, we did a Maniac Cop retrospective 3 days before Robert Zadar died.
Yeah.
That's fucking creepy, too.
I know. He went down.
Because we had no idea. We just wanted to talk about the Maniac Cop movies.
Well, you didn't see him. He was in real, real bad shape. His legs were weeping and stuff. He was supposed to be on dialysis. I think he skipped dialysis to be there.
Ugh.
Well, you know, I think he honestly knew he was on his way out, and he wanted, you know, one last shot with the fans. And he got the one last shot with the fans. We were luckily we had a couple people that were nurses there, because if it was just, you know, the usual crowd of guys, we really wouldn't have known how to handle it. Because he was really that sick. But, you know, he wanted to be there. What are you going to do? You know, people are entitled to one last hurrah.
They are. And you know what? I don't know. Because when Bill gave me those laser discs and stuff, you know, I'm always going to remember him for that kind of stuff. You remember that whole Fight for Freedom poster that he made in the 90s? The one with the four scantily clad women raising the flag at Iwo Jima?
Yeah, I had one in my store.
He promised me he was going to try and get me one of those posters. Obviously, they're all sold out. He was going to look for one.
Yeah.
And I know he had a framed one on his wall. I hope it doesn't sound selfish that whoever, you know, packs up his stuff, I would really love that poster to remember my friend by. I would really love that Fight for Your Freedom poster that he had on his wall. You know, I would like to hang that on my wall and remember my friend, because Bill was my friend. We talked all the time. We sent each other stuff. I sent him DVDs. He sent me comic books. And, I mean, he sent me a stack of old comic books and stuff like that. He was going to send me some old Tales from the Crypts he had from the 1950s. He sent you a Street Fighter poster, an original Sonny Chiba Street Fighter poster, just because. He didn't ask for anything for it. He was just like, hey, I have this. You want it. That's the kind of guy Bill was.
Yeah, then he sent me and Carter those first Wild Bunch t-shirts that had the four of them watching and said, why not?
He sent me one of those, too. I have one of those as well. It's, you know, that's the kind of guy he was. Yeah. He liked to help people. He liked to make people happy. He really did not look for anything in return. I mean, I sent him DVDs because I knew these were things he would enjoy watching.
Well, you know what it is? Porn people in general get this really fucking bad rap of being scumbags, but they're not. I mean, when I was like in between shit, Carter Stevens offered me a room to stay at his place. When I was going in for the surgery, Kay Parker was sending me energy healing. It goes on and on and on. You know, nobody, you know, we're all, you know, sadly we're all the same age and, you know, maybe, you know, for them, maybe they, you know, none of us made the right choices back then. Even myself as being a hustler and a peddler and shit like that. You know, I didn't put enough away for the fucking future. You know, we all think we're going to live forever and everything's going to be cool, but it ain't. I'm just a little bit luckier than most for my expenses aren't that much, but I ain't doing that great. And, you know, what's going on today? I don't know what's going to fucking happen. But like I said,
I hope that, like, when the AVN Awards come out this year, and, you know, I hope Hustler does something on Bill. I hope Bill is remembered. If the AVN Awards does not have a remembrance for Bill Margold, they are dead to me.
Yeah, well, I snuck an obituary in GP under the 11th hour, so that'll be in there at least.
Because, he was a, not, like I said, not just a booster of adult. He loved sci-fi, horror, slasher films. He loved grindhouse films. He grew up on these, and he was a hard champion for these kind of movies.
He was a big Wild Bunch fan, too. He knew...
That movie.
He was friends with Paul Harper. That's how he was telling me about that the footage of the bounty hunters getting shot actually existed, but nobody knows where it is or what happened to it. So,
yeah, so, the way I put it on my Facebook page, the world is a worse place for him not being in it.
Yeah.
So, on that note, you mentioned GP, and you've got a little thing about Bill in there. Where can people get that?
Well, the next issue will be available probably the first week in April on Amazon. I'll be at Cinema Wasteland with them. It's dedicated to the women in Grindhouse. It's an all-women's issue, but, you know, like I said, Bill's obituary is in there along with Ted Michaels, Zachary, and H.G. Lewis. It's not something I like to do, but it's something that has to be done. So that's how I honor my friends.
This has been a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.